right, we're moving. Welcome to Modone Ivry, updated technology, and ready to go. I wonder if it really actually sounds better on the... I'll have to check the website and see once they get some of these downloaded and see if it's any better. Huh? We're in the book of Habakkuk, and we're just about ready to start chapter 2, which actually, syntax-wise and also lexically, is a very challenging section that we're in and that we're going to be in for most of chapter 2, especially the first part. So we'll have to be a little patient and kind of talk things through, because there's going to be a lot of options presented for us. We left Habakkuk last time with his second response, as we're reading the book, to Yahweh's words of condemnation. Habakkuk had the complaint about the injustice in Israel, and Yahweh counters it by saying, well, I'm sending the Chaldeans, like, you know, a flood to take care of a spot on the kitchen floor. And so Habakkuk responds and says, you need this whole flood? You know, the people that are righteous are being undone by people more wicked than they are. And that's where he leaves his complaint. So now we get to the most famous part of the book. I guess parts of chapter 3 are pretty well known too. But chapter 2, we're ready to start at verse 1. And Habakkuk now is still talking. So he's still continuing his speech. The switchover is actually at verse 2, as you will see. Al mishmarti emoda ve'et yatzva al matzor va'atzapeh lirot ma yedaber bi uma ashiv al tokachti. On my watch... Notice you can see the root shamar from there. Mishmeret is a famous word. So on my watch, e'emoda, I will stand. Notice that this is a long form. It looks like a cohortative. But again, in a lot of these first-person forms, sometimes you get the hey, and I don't know if it depends on scribal tradition, the manuscript, but there's no need to translate this as a cohortative. You have a number of forms like this. This happens on Vav consecutive first persons as well. And I don't know if it happens in later manuscripts or in later writings or not, and how consistent that is. You kind of see it in a number of places. So, on my watch, e'emoda, I will stand. Ve'et yatzva. This is from a hit pael, all right, from yatzav, which is similar to natzav. And I will... station myself, let's say. Notice that Amad and Yatzav are synonyms here. So I will take my stand and I will station myself al Matzor, on a siege tower, Matzor, or on just a tower. All right. Va'atzapeh, and I will watch, from Zapa. This is a PL. All right. First common singular from Zapa. And I will watch Lirot. How does the lamed function? To see? Notice its purpose, in order to see, from ra'ah. This is a call infinitive construct. In order to see, ma yedaber bi, what he will say, and maybe you translate this bi, what he will speak against me. All right, you could probably translate a little more neutrally, what he will say to me, but maybe the beh is there for that reason. And now notice what he says. He's still pretty audacious here. So what he will say to me, and what ashiv, notice what's the root? What, yeah. And what I will return to tokachti, to my rebuke. Okay, now let's look at how you should understand that. My rebuke means what? Could you unpack that? Him rebuking me. See, so it's not me rebuking him. So it's more of an objective. See, so you're kind of understanding God is the one doing the rebuking. So notice he says, I will look to see what he will say to me and how I will answer his rebuke. So he already kind of knows he's going to get rebuked, but he's not put back by it. See, so that's what you get, the sense that Habakkuk is very bold and audacious here with God. See? And that's why I've said the whole purpose of the book is the humbling of Habakkuk. All right, I'll try to make that point when we get to this famous line in verse 4. Good. Any questions on verse 1? Any of the grammar and stuff? All right. Here comes Yahweh. Vaya'aneni Yahweh vayomer. Ketov chatzon uva'er al haluchot. Then Yahweh answered me. Anyone see the root of Vayaaneni? From Ana. Good. From Ana. Then Yahweh answered me and said, Ketov, imperative call, plain A spelling, right? With the Vav for the vowel marker. Ketov. Write a chatzon. Write the vision or revelation. Uva'er. This is a P-A-L imperative from Ba'ar. And write it plainly. Make it plain. Al haluchot. On the tablets. Whether these tablets were clay or stone or wood, no one is sure of the material. All right? Now, so that, lama'an, yarutz kore vo. Yarutz means to run. Kore is to read. So notice that's the participle that's the subject of run. So that one reading bo, so that one who reads it can run. What the heck does that mean? Well, it probably simply means something like write it plainly so that it can be read easily, so that the reader can run his eyes across it. That's how most commentaries understand. It's not as if, oh, he's going to read it and then run away and pass it on or something like that, but it's much more kind of just a way of saying, you know, notice that the previous clause helps us with that. Write it plainly on tablets so that it can be read easily. See, so that one who reads it can read it easily. All right, that's kind of basically how that's understood.
Are you like when you translate it, write it plainly? Are you like making that a hindiety, like two verbs that are saying one thing?
In the last clause, the Yarutz Kore, that's how some grammarians explain the relationship between Kore and Yarutz. So the one reading it can run. He explains it as two verbs for one idea, so that it can be read plainly. All right. The first one, the Ba'er, means to make something clear. Ba'er, make something plain. All right. Okay, good. Any other questions? Verse 3. Kior chatzon lamoed veyafeach laketz velo yekazev. All right. For yet there is a vision for the moed, for the appointed time. All right. So notice that he has a set time when this is going to come true. Now, this word, veyafeach. Formerly, it was thought to be from a root like puach. All right. A hifil. And it meant to pant. It means to pant, to breathe. And they would say that literally, this is ridiculous, it pants to the end, but then they would make this transfer, it hastens to the end. All right? And it will not lie. But Ugaritic texts have found this word, yapeach, to mean witness. And a form like this occurs in Psalm 27, actually, to mean witness, and a couple times in Proverbs, a lengthened form. So, as a synonym with aid, witness, aid. All right, so I think that's the better translation. For yet there is a vision for the appointed time, and a witness to the end, and it will not lie, kazav. See, it will not deceive. So it's not a false witness. I think that fits the context a lot better. All right. Im yit mama chakelo ki vo yavo lo ye acher. Okay. If it yit mama. If it delays, this is from the root. Can anyone see what the root is? It looks like a scramble of words. Close. It's actually mem he, then he with the hirik, maha, and it's. Yeah, it's a hit palel or whatever you want to call it. You can make up any word you want there. Hit palel sounds good to me. So it's mem hey with the hirik. There's the reduplication there. All right. So, and remember, I was reading Nahum the other night, and he loves plays on words like this. I mean, they're all over the place, and prophets tend to like stuff like this. So, im yit mama, if it delays, chakelo, wait for it. Again, a PL from chaka to wait, PL imperative. So if it delays, chakelo, wait for it. Kivo yavo, infinitive absolute followed by the finite verb. For it will certainly come, vo yavo. Alright? Or you could translate, again, how does the, Kevin can give us a dissertation on this. How does the infinitive absolute function? You could say it will come quickly as an adverb that modifies the action. But here, you know, most translations go with it will certainly come lo ye'acher. It will not delay. Again, a pl imperfect from achar. The chet, of course, does not have the degesh. It's virtual doubling. Okay? All right. Questions through verse 3 then. All right, now here we get to this big line. Hine upla lo yashra nafsho bo, v'tzadik be'emunato yichya. Okay, look, now, upla. This is a pu'al, again, a form that, if you notice, just look at the text. There's some textual difficulties throughout in these next two verses. But notice that there's a couple other suggestions, but really no manuscript evidence. Septuagint seems to have a different readings for a couple other words here. So, look, puffed up. What's the subject? Notice that this is a pu'al, third feminine. Look, puffed up, lo yashra, not upright. Here's the subject, nafsho, his soul. Okay? Now, here's how a couple people translate, and I'm going to translate it like this, and it can be debated, but it helps me make my point, so I'm going to do it. Behold, a soul which is puffed up, his soul is not upright in him. Okay. So the puffed up soul is one whose soul is not upright in him. All right. So that I see this line in correspondence or in contrast to the righteous one, tzaddik. Alright? So he's talking in a sense about the arrogant one, the puffed up soul. His soul is not upright in him. But a tzaddik, a righteous one, be'emunato yichya, lives by his emunah. Alright? Now at least the New Revised Standard and I think that F.F. Bruce translates it that way, and I looked up a couple others, and they seem to take the line that way. So in other words, I think that that line is not referring to the Chaldeans, the first part of verse 4. I don't think that he refers to him, but it's referring to a certain quality of person. That's the case I want to make. So Yahweh says, look, his soul is puffed up, the arrogant soul, see, hine, upla, see, his puffed up soul is one who is not upright in him. That's kind of, the nafsho is the subject of both those verbs referring to an arrogant person. And that arrogant person, his soul is not upright. But the righteous one, by his faith, lives. Okay, now, here's the point that I want to make with all this. I would suggest that this is kind of an indirect judgment of Habakkuk. So that, I mean, notice in chapter 1, verse 13, remember when he asked this question? Why do you look at Bogdim, treacherous people? You are silent when the evil one swallows up one more tzaddik than him. So notice Habakkuk's whole thing is, hey, the tzaddik are being swallowed up by Rasha. Here Yahweh says, a tzaddik lives by his emunah, by his faithfulness. So in other words, he's kind of indirectly asking Habakkuk to question whether he's a tzaddik. In other words, the whole assumption that Habakkuk's making is, I'm on the tzaddik side. All right, but notice that he's being kind of arrogant and rash and bold throughout this whole thing, questioning God's ways. And so notice in the first line, God says, look, a person whose soul is puffed up is not upright in him. And a righteous guy lives by his emunah. So in other words, it's an indirect way of, this is the point I want to make, of the humbling of Habakkuk by all of a sudden revealing to him, you're not as righteous as you think, see? You're not living by emunah, which is both faith and the outcome of faith, a faithful way of life. You know, Hebrew kind of has both sides of the same coin here. So you don't have to exclude interfaith from this word, and you don't have to focus totally on just external life. I think emunah is faith and the faithfulness that follows from it. It's kind of a more holistic way of looking at the person. Okay, so a tzaddik lives this way, i.e. Habakkuk, why aren't you living that way? You're not living that way, see? That's the point. That's what I think is happening here with this line. And again, that can be debated. But within the whole book, notice I'm trying to explain what Yahweh is trying to do. And so we'll see what happens as the book goes along. Okay. Anyone have any questions about that or anything else through the four verses?
Kyle. Is that pretty common in the Old Testament?
Anyone know the Hebrew verb that comes from it? Aman, to be faithful. And you know the hifil he'emin, to believe or to trust. So this is a noun, emunah, faithfulness. It's not that uncommon, I don't think. We get our English amen from it. Dave. Oh, okay. You didn't have a question. Sorry. Verse 5. Here we have more problems. Va'afki hayayin bogeid. Gever Yahir Velo Yinve. Okay. Again, it does get easier, so just hang in there with me. Af ki, but surely or certainly, af ki. Take that as a kind of an emphatic together. Af ki, but surely, but certainly. Now notice what the text says. Ha yain. You all know that word, right? Yain is wine. Sure, of course. Lutherans would know that. Right? Right. Wine. Wine bogeid. Okay, see, certainly wine betrays. Now, following along the book, that just seems, what are we talking about here? We're not talking about anything like that. All right. I want you to look at, and a lot of translations go with this. Notice what the Qumran reading has. Qumran, instead of yain, has Hey Vav Nun. Everybody see that under 5b? Hey Vav Nun. That's the word for wealth, all right? Desire for wealth. So a lot, and then notice he has the imperfect instead of the participle. So Qumran has hon, see, yivgod. Wealth betrays, or greed betrays, which makes a lot more sense here since we've been talking about the Chaldeans and their greed. Okay, so again, maybe you know the Hayyin is just really hard to make sense of it here. Greed betrays. Gever means man, and Yahir means arrogant. So it's a part. It's a adjective. Yahir modifies Gever, arrogant man. Okay. So I think that you could make actually that the, if you go with the Qumran reading, it fits very nicely as the object. Certainly, greed or wealth betrays an arrogant man. Velo yinveh, and he will not endure. That yinveh is from nun vav he, call imperfect. He will not last, he will not remain, and he will not endure. Now, Yahweh seems to be turning his attention to the Chaldeans specifically. Not totally, but that's who he seems to be talking about here. Again, we have that referent issue that's going to keep confronting us. Okay, and he will not endure Asher, the one who here chiv kishol nafsho, the one who broadens. Here's hifil from rachav, to be broad. Here chiv, to make broad. The one who broadens like sheol, his appetite, his nefesh. That's a good translation, I think, for nefesh. See? So, and it fits right in with the previous line. Certainly, wealth betrays the arrogant man, and he will not endure. The one who broadens like Sheol his appetite. Vehu kamava, and he is like death. Velo yisva, that is, he is never satisfied. All right? Yisbas from Sava, simple call, imperfect. All right. So the one who broadens like Sheol his appetite, and he is like death, ve, that is, notice I'm translating this as kind of explanatory. How is he like death? That is, he is like death in that he is never satisfied. Okay? Vayesof, and so he gathers Elav to him kol hagoyim. We're on solid ground, finally. He gathers all nations to him. See, it's like, oh, this is simple. Vayikbots, again, collects, gathers. Notice Asaf and Kavats are synonyms. And he collects Elav to himself, kol ha'amim, all people. All right? So notice how the argument that verse 5 is making. Wealth betrays the arrogant man. He will not endure. The one who bronzes his appetites, who's like death, who's never satisfied. As a result, he gathers all nations to himself. See, he just keeps conquering, in other words. All right? Now, so that's what verse 5 is about. Now, verse 6, he asks this question. What's going to happen? Halo Ela, will not these, he's talking about the conquered people, the nations, Halo Ela, will not these, Kulam, all of them, Alav, against him, namely this greedy person, Chaldea, Babylon, a Mashal Yisau, will they not raise up or lift up? Not, and this is a call from Nasa. Okay, so will not these, all of them, against him, namely the person described in verse 5, raise up a mashal, a song, a taunt song, or a, I wouldn't say proverb, but this is in a negative sense, a mashal, a song, yeah, of satire, maybe irony, something like that. Will they not do this? And a metzilah. And a again, this is a taunting song, a satirical song. Chidot. Chidot, does anyone know what this means? A riddle. This is what Samson had, a chidah. Remember, the lion out of the eater shall come forth sweet. Okay, chidot. So Samson loved chidot. So notice it uses mashal, metzilah, chidot as synonyms. Will they not raise up a mashal against him and a metzilah, jokes concerning him? All right, and here is where they start in for as an example of one. Hoy, woe ha marbeth, woe to the one who multiplies. This is a hifil participle from rava. Rava means to be great. Here's the hifil participle to make great, used as a substantive. Woe to the one who multiplies lolo, what is not his. Remember we had that lolo reading before? In chapter 1, where was that? Yeah, I'll find it. Can't find it now. Let's see here. It was right at... Verse 6, you got it? The last phrase, verse 6. Remember we had the dogish and the lolo? So here's another place where that occurs. Same kind of reading. So, woe to the one who multiplies what is not his. Lolo, not to him. Ad matai, how long? Umakbid, and the one who piles up. This is a hifil participle from kavad, to be heavy, to make heavy. One who piles up alav avtit. Avtit is a debt. One who piles up upon himself an avtit, a debt. Okay, so he's going into the first woe. And now, just to look, we got a couple minutes left. I just want you to see, notice verse 6, you have that hoy. Verse 9, hoy. Verse 12, hoy. See, verse 15, hoy. I think that's... then you have one in verse 19, hoy. See, so that kind of structures, there's going to be these woes that are going to be said against different groups of people. So the first one is, woe to the one who multiplies what is not his. He gathers it up. Now, does it refer to Babylon or to the ungodly in Israel? To both, see? But notice what's being pronounced is judgment. A mashal in the negative sense, a metzilah or chidot. Satire, irony, those kinds of things probably is what it means. All right? Good. So we'll stop here and we will start with verse 7. Again, hang in there. Chapter 2 is difficult, but Chapter 3 is beautiful. It's Habakkuk's prayer.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming.